Okay, now we've got Steve and Janice here, and Stephen is like the expert on films coming to the Paramount Theater this summer. We've got a huge series. It started already, hasn't it?
It starts tomorrow, actually.
Starts tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, then we're right on time.
Right on time.
Okay, and yeah. What's tomorrow's film going
to
be?
So tomorrow we're opening with Casablanca,
what?
As we do every year.
What? Casablanca. There's nothing, I've told you this before, but there's no fonder memory that I have than of when I was at a play at the State Theater years ago.
Uh-huh.
And it was before you were doing the series. It was Steve Wilson was doing it.
Oh, yeah.
And I walked across to the Paramount Theater and just walked in, and the Casablanca was showing. And I walked in, and there was Ingrid Bergman's face.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I'm telling you, that just to see Ingrid Bergman on the big screen in black and white is just... it's a treat that you can't find anywhere
yeah,
else.
Yeah, and it's one of those movies that you really can watch at least once a year, which
at
is
least.
Why we do it. Yeah,
at
I
least.
Think some people probably once a month would be fine.
Yep.
But yeah, so that's what we're opening with. And sort of the big news this year is that the Paramount, we've brought in a brand new screen and brand new sound system.
Wait.
Yeah. It's going to be...
A big brand new screen.
Yeah, so the screen that we've had is about 30 years old, I think. So we brought in a new one, which is going to make the image a lot brighter, a lot crisper. And then we've totally revamped all the speakers in the entire theater. So it's going to sound amazing. You're
gonna
going to hear Ingrid
There's
Bergman.
There's no question.
Yeah, better than you've ever heard her before. And so we'll be debuting all that stuff for Casablanca tomorrow night, which will be really amazing. And then after Casablanca, we'll be showing the Maltese Falcon, which is having its 75th anniversary this year.
So is it double bill? Or?
It's a double bill, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, two for one. And we'll be showing Maltese Falcon digitally, because we've also put in a brand new digital projection system at the Paramount. So sort of these first 2 weeks, what we're doing is we're pairing a film. So we'll be showing Casablanca on actual 35mm film with a brand new digital projection. So
wow.
So that's going to be
wow.
We're debuting so much new stuff tomorrow night.
I can't believe it. It's like I continue to be amazed at the technology that keeps evolving and becoming available to for people to use.
Right.
And so we're going to be watching Casablanca probably in a way that was better than the way
it'll
they watched
be,
it in the original.
It'll look and sound so much better than you've ever seen it. And the exciting thing about bringing the digital in is there are a lot of movies that, we love showing film and we're going to keep showing actual film prints for as long as we can. But there are a lot of movies that don't exist on film anymore. Or if
right.
they do, it's really in real bad shape. It's almost pink from wear and tear and that sort of thing. So there's a lot of movies, just to take a genre as an example, musicals like Oklahoma, The King and I, Gigi, Cabaret. These are musicals that I love and haven't been able to show at the Paramount because they don't exist on a good film print. So bringing the digital stuff in this year allows me to show now all those movies. So there's so many things this year I'm excited about.
Oh, Stephen, I'm so happy for you. That's like it opens the floodgates.
It does. It's whereas before I was limited to what's available on film, which is still a great deal. Now it really is just a question of what do I want to show, and I'll be able to show it regardless of what the format is. So the good news is that we're still able to show film, and people are really excited about seeing movies on film these days. I think for a while there, we thought that film prints were going to, pass away. But the excitement that people have for seeing it has really, I think, brought it back. And so
kind
we're
like
able to do both.
Turntables and
exactly,
and
exactly.
And...
like vinyl records, they sort of have made a comeback. So it's exciting
now,
to be able to do both.
Let me ask you as an expert, when you watch on screen a projection of something that is from film versus something that is a digital image of the same film,
That was the issue when digital first came out, is people felt like they could really tell a difference between seeing a film on film and seeing digital. And I think what they've done over the past several years of digital is sort of bring the two closer together and make digital, the experience of seeing digital, a lot more like film. So I would say that except for those, very few people who can really spot little things, it's practically
the
same thing.
You get up
there
with a microscope.
Yeah,
and
of course, if you're watching an older film, you'll see the scratches and you'll see some of the, blips and the little pieces of character, that mark
right.
an old film print. But for the most part, most people wouldn't be able to tell the difference.
Stephen, there's a film I saw this last year. It was, I believe, it was a remake. Well, it was the original version of House of Wax.
Oh yeah.
And it had, you know, Fay Wray was in it, uh-huh. And it was slightly colored, not intensely colored like they've done with a lot of those old films, but just had a slight coloration to it. And it was so arch and so evil and German expressionism, you know, with big angles and you know, light coming from strange directions.
Yeah, I think that was actually one of the very first sort of like two-tone Technicolor movie when they were just starting to experiment with color. And you get just like, it almost looks like it was hand-tinted frame by frame.
Yes.
Yeah, I've seen that one.
I just love that.
Yeah, that one's fun.
So I'm glad you've seen it too. Anyway, so, and then later, I found so many things that by going to the thrift store and finding, oh, look what's on there. And I found one of A Star Is Born yesterday.
Oh, which one? Judy Garland? Or
no, the earlier one.
The earlier one. Uh-huh.
Which was Greer Garson or somebody was in it. Yeah. An older one. And so you guys have some of these old films and some of the modern ones. And
I mean, the best thing that we do is we sort of run the gamut between, we're showing a movie this year called Intolerance that's celebrating its 100th anniversary. So
now that's from way back.
1916. So, you know, we've got a 100-year-old movie all the way down to a movie made by actually a local filmmaker, Andrew Bujalski, called Computer Chess from, I think, 3 years ago. So,
wow.
If your definition of classic film is something made before 1960, we've got tons of John Wayne and Betty Davis and Jimmy Stewart and Cary Grant for you. And if your definition of a classic is a bit more expansive, we've got things like Space Jam and Labyrinth and, of course, Purple Rain. Who doesn't want to see Purple Rain these days? So, you know, it's a great way to sort of, no matter what age you are, whether or not you want to bring your kids or your friends or your spouse or your partner or whatever it is, we have something for you pretty much every night of the week. And that's what I love about the job. I get to do a week of Westerns. I get to do a week of musicals. You know, we're doing a week of political satires and dramas this year because we've obviously been hearing a lot about politics lately.
Oh, yes. I think
you've heard a couple of things about that. So we're going to show Duck Soup, which is a Marx Brothers political film, just because it can't get any sillier than what's actually been going on.
No. The silliest is the one that I mentioned earlier, that Chewbacca video. Did you see that?
Oh, I have seen that. Yeah, I was heard
if you
want to
laugh,
that.
You know, you got to watch the Chewbacca video. So let's see. I have a little tune queued up here, and tell me about
it. Oh, let's hear it.
Music from Blade Runner, music by Vangelis. And this is one of the films showing this summer?
It is, and that's one of my favorite scores. It's so great.
Yes.
And I love how often you show film scores, John. I have a chip on my shoulder from when I was in college. I was roommates with a couple of music majors, and whenever I would listen to John Williams stuff, they would always play some sort of classical piece and tell me what he's ripping off.
Oh, he's
ripping off the planets and that sort of thing. So to have someone as well versed in classical music as you play this stuff is really awesome.
Well, what is going on in music these days? There are some wonderful compositions that composers still write for concerts, but a lot of the great music is written for films.
Yeah, and it's great to be able to sort of hear a piece of music like this that is not only just a great piece of music, but it brings back so many of those memories of the movie for you.
When is Blade Runner going to be shown?
Blade Runner is happening in, I think, July.
And what Stephen is doing is opening the
giant film calendar
in the paper the other day. It was in the Chronicle.
The Chronicle, over 100 films listed here, and that's part of a little sci-fi thing we're doing along with The Thing, the John Carpenter 1980s version, and Metropolis, the old German silent film.
Oh, it should be great.
Which are all sci-fi movies where there are people in it who may not be as they seem. So that's one of the examples of a fun category to put together.
You said something really brilliant there. People who may not be as they seem.
Yes, exactly.
The key word being seem.
we're trying to be vague so we don't give too much away.
Right.
Anyone who actually hasn't seen any of those movies.
Stephen Denise is my guest this morning, and he's telling about the series that goes on every summer at the Paramount Theater. It's a 100 films, something. What?
104, I think, this
104
year.
104 films.
Yeah, running from starting tomorrow through September 4th.
As Taylor, my producer, said, you want all my money this summer, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, we try to put as many things up there that people want to see. We want everyone to come and spend the summer with us. It's really hot and muggy outside, and it's a very nice and cool inside the Paramount. So it's fun to come in and see movies. I always love doing our family film series that we do every year, and this year we've gotten several Disney movies that I've never been able to show before, so we're getting to show stuff like Mary Poppins and Aladdin and a 75th anniversary screening of Dumbo, which I'm really excited about. I don't know.
Wow. Pink elephants were floating around when I was 6 years old or something.
Such a great film. I think it's only like 64 minutes long, and that's, I think, the most fun is when we do these kids shows and we can maybe show something that a lot of today's kids maybe haven't had a chance to see before.
And, you know, the brilliant thing about those Disney films that were made for kids, they were also made for the kids' parents.
Yeah.
So the parents wouldn't be groaning.
It's not, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 8 or whatever, and the parents are just like, want to crawl into a hole.
Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
That's an actual movie, John.
They've made
more than one of them.
Oh, my God.
I'm not lying.
Well, I'm looking down here and I see, there's these hunks. So you got Magic Mike going on.
Yes.
And that's hysterical.
That's what we call a new classic.
And isn't that funny how you can get a classic just, 5 years ago that came out or something, and here it is a classic.
Yeah, and of course, everyone's definition of a classic is gonna differ. But sometimes you go to a movie theater and you see a brand new movie and you walk out thinking, I think that's already a classic for yourself.
Right.
If you can leave the theater and say, that's a movie I want to see over and over again, then for you, that's a classic movie.
Now I'm looking here and you've got Blade Runner playing in the background, and we got Blade Runner coming to the Paramount, and I'm seeing a picture of Harrison Ford, who's also in Star Wars, whose premiere is today.
Uh-huh.
And I saw in the entertainment they've got a new Han Solo cast for the next series of Star Wars.
They have.
I don't remember what his name
was. Young Han Solo. It's a tough name to pronounce. I'm not even going to try it.
And so, let's see, Lord of the Rings is coming, the whole trilogy?
Yeah, the whole trilogy. It's the extended versions that they released on Blu-ray after the theatrical versions came out. And it's one of the rare examples of a movie where adding even more stuff to an already very long movie was actually really great. You got a lot more character development and a lot more detail. And so we're going to obviously show one per day because they last six hours each. 4 hours each.
Okay.
So we're not going to make you sit through all three in a single day. You can come and see one on Friday, one Saturday, one Sunday. And I've seen them that way before. And to really invest in those characters over a few days and get to know them, by the end of it, it feels like you're saying goodbye to old friends. It's really a fun experience to have.
And that's coming up mid-July.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's, you know, great example, followed up shortly by some of the great American auteurs, and we're showing two Mike Nichols movies and two Robert Altman movies and two Woody Allen movies. So,
which Mike Nichols?
The Graduate and Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
Can't do
which
better.
Is 50th anniversary of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. That's one of my all-time favorites.
Just walking around the university area, go by the Humanities Research Center, and they've got a picture of Elizabeth Taylor as the wolf lady.
As Martha.
Yes, Martha.
Yeah, George and Martha.
And George is not far behind. Now, wait. Ah, yes. I think you got some cowboys coming, too.
Absolutely. Another anniversary, Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, 50th anniversary, and another example of a movie that was restored.
50th anniversary.
Yeah.
Clint Eastwood must be barely alive anymore.
Well, he's living out in Carmel, so I think he's soaking in all the youthful sun
over there.
But, yeah, that was a movie that was, they restored a lot of those old Sergio Leone movies recently digitally, and so I've been waiting for the chance to bring that one back.
So those are some of the ones that now you get to play since Paramount has all this new digital equipment. If you didn't hear us speaking just a few minutes ago, there's a new screen at the Paramount.
Mm-hmm.
They've replaced the 30-year-old screen with a big, bright, crispy, clear new screen.
Yep.
Totally new sound system, new speakers, new amplifiers, new everything. Plus, they have a new digital system in which they can project digital images now.
Yeah.
So they have total freedom.
I was in Los Angeles a few weeks ago, Turner Classic Movies. They do a classic film festival every year, and they showed The King and I at the old Chinese theater, which has now had undergone some of the same updates that we have, you know, big new screen, new sound. And that's where I saw The King and I, which was shot on CinemaScope 55, a huge film format, and to see it that way was just mind-blowing. And so we'll be able to do that.
Your head is turning from side
to
side.
You can barely soak in any of the image.
There's no way.
No,
you cannot see that. Your peripheral vision can take it all in.
There's so much detail.
You want to see the detail. You want to look.
Yeah, and of course you're also trying to hear the amazing music at the same time.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, it's very exciting for us to be able to do that, and of course it'll be great too when South by Southwest and all the film festivals come in. We'll have all that equipment ready for them, and so it'll be a spot where we can show brand new movies and where we'll be able to show these old movies, and they'll look and sound so amazing.
We can now truly say that the Paramount Theater has come into the digital age. And I'm waiting for this other thing to queue up over here. Yeah, I think he's queued up. Let's see what you can make of this one, Stephen. Oh, yes. You know what it is immediately. This is actually music by Henry Purcell, a classical composer from the 17th century. He was born in, he lived in the 1600s, and he was probably about Stephen's age when he passed away. And he wrote this amazing music for the funeral of Queen Mary, and that's what is now transformed into the theme music from Clockwork Orange. So fill us in, Stephen.
Yeah, you know, going back to talking about film scores, I think the fascinating thing when you talk about a lot of the great film directors, they tend to have a really good working relationship with people who are running the cameras and the people who are doing the music for their movies. And so you can look across all of Stanley Kubrick's movies and find amazing music that we all remember throughout. I actually heard a story I hadn't heard before recently about 2001, Space Odyssey, where he had the great film composer Alex North write a full film score for that movie. Alex North had done movies like Streetcar Named Desire and
Cleopatra,
many great scores. But while they were sort of working through the editing of the movie, they were using the old classical pieces, and basically Stanley Kubrick decided those worked so well for the movie that he ended up, and now iconically we know that the scene with the monkey holding the bone and all that with the great classical music, he decided to just keep that stuff in and didn't tell Alex North until the premiere of the film, when Alex North was sitting in the audience and heard, oh, that's not my music.
I cannot even fathom how cruel Stanley Kubrick was.
Mm-hmm.
Alex North came to the theater expecting to, at the premiere,
to hear
he expected to hear his own music.
Yeah.
And what did he get?
He got
music like this.
He got old music that everyone knew. Yeah,
but
exactly.
I mean, still, it worked out.
No,
well.
It was the right decision. You know, that's the thing when you're a film director, especially one as sort of very sharply focused as Stanley Kubrick, you just do what's best for the movie,
right,
regardless of whether or not that's going to make you any friends. And I don't think Stanley Kubrick's making friends was high on his priority list. So,
well, you know,
just making the best movie, which is great for all of us because now we have all these great movies that many of his crept onto the schedule this year. In addition to Clockwork, we're showing 2001 on 70mm, which is the biggest image you can get, and that's the only way to see that movie.
You know, thinking back to the film of the Dancing Planets with the music of the Blue Danube.
Oh yeah,
and that is perfect. And mm-hmm. So I'm sorry, but 2001 needed to have that Blue Danube music for the planets.
I think that a lot of times people can listen to classical film, classical music, and they can see a movie, mm-hmm. In their head sometimes, and it's hard to get it out, once you've attached that music to that image.
People listen to classical music without films at all, mm-hmm. and come up with images in their head anyway.
Exactly.
And back in the 1910s, say, people would, they had organ music where somebody would just sit up there and play all sorts of different classical pieces, mm-hmm. and they would associate the images on the film with somehow that music fit in.
Right. I mean, people weren't even bothering to write actual music for films until much later.
Hadn't come in.
Yeah.
But now, thank God, it's with us all the time. So let's see, what else do we have?
We've got so much. We have a 2-week period that I've sort of called summer school, where every night it's going to be basically like a class that we're teaching with movies. And so we're doing a night, for example, History 101, where we'll show Monty Python and the Holy Grail and Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, which of course aren't the most accurate reflections on history, but it's a lot of fun. And we're doing literature nights, so we'll be showing Martin Scorsese's The Age of Innocence, great Daniel Day-Lewis movie,
right.
And the Leo DiCaprio version of Romeo and Juliet, and a great movie called Orlando starring Tilda Swinton that I don't think very many people have seen.
I saw it.
You remember that one?
It was weird as hell.
That's a weird one.
Yeah.
And it feels actually very modern and very unique, and then you find out it was based on an old Virginia Woolf novel, and that's sort of mind-blowing too. Also a great film score for that one. So there's just so much great stuff. We have a foreign films week where we're going to show The Red Shoes, the great Technicolor ballet movie, with the Jean Cocteau French version of Beauty and the Beast
from
the 40s, which was about as beautiful a black and white movie as you'll ever see.
I swear, that is one of my favorite films of all time.
It's gorgeous. And it's the 70th anniversary of that movie this year, and they struck brand new film prints for that one. So talk about, film being like vinyl. Normally they don't restore movies onto film prints anymore, but they did for that one. So we'll be excited to show that.
It's such a classic.
It's just
so
beautiful.
Done.
Yeah.
It's just, so if you've never seen Beauty and the Beast, La Belle et la Bête, by Jean Cocteau, you've got to see this film.
Absolutely.
And so King Kong's going to crawl up on top of the Empire State Building. Scarlett's going to kiss Rhett. And there's going to be lots of James Dean, Rebel Without a Cause, and Giant, and all. And, oh, and you got the Some Like It Hot with the two funniest guys dressed up in drag that I've ever seen, Tony Curtis and Jack Lemmon. That's the funniest drag movie of all time.
I agree. Absolutely. Just, one of the funniest movies, period.
Yes. I mean, I don't know that there are that many drag movies that are famous, but you know, Hedwig. But let's see, there's you got the Godfather series, Ben-Hur, Robin Hood. You got it all.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's funny, I didn't do this on purpose, but I go back and look at the schedule, and you look at movies like King Kong and Ben-Hur, and we're showing one of the old Ninja Turtles movies from when I was a kid, and you start to see how many of these movies are being remade or have sequels, you know, coming out. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a new Ben-Hur this summer. There's going to be a new King Kong again in a year or two.
Another King Kong.
And it's just like, you know, there doesn't seem to be that many new ideas in Hollywood, but it's great that we have not just our theater, but theaters all over the world that are able to keep bringing back these old ones and sort of remind us of why we fell in love with these stories and these characters in the first
place.
You know,
Stephen, it's a curious question. Is it just because they're too lazy, or they just have this marketing thing? Well, this worked before. Let's see if it works now. Or is it something mythic in the imagination of human beings? That, like, there's something about King Kong, the naturalistic element, the native taken from his natural environment and unleashed in the city. Is that's somehow?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think actually it's people not wanting to do the work necessary to make a new myth. So they think, well, we have King Kong. It's already in people's minds. They sort of already associate it with certain things. Like, why try to do that again? Why not just take that thing that's already there
and save
some money and, you know, go home at 5? You know, there's not as much of an ambition and a motivation to create original stories anymore.
But if they do it really well.
If they do it really well, then that's fine.
And you got to go to the Paramount to
see it. We might show it in 50 years.
So we'll end up where we began and come back to a song that I think you will remember is associated with the film Casablanca. Stephen Genise, wonderful friend from the Paramount Theater. He assembles all these films and runs them every summer. And so you're going to have a chance to go down to the Paramount Theater, make an afternoon or an evening of it, bring your kids, or just, you know, go by yourself and enjoy these incredible films. And, you know, they just don't make them like they used to.
They don't. Absolutely
not. I don't think so. But anyway, I'm glad that we've got it. And thank you so much for coming in and sharing all this.
Thank you, John.